welcome to Truett Hirsch Inc.'s first quarter fiscal 2014 earnings conference call. My name is Denise, and I will be your operator today. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During today's call, you will first hear from Philip L. Hirsch, President and CEO of Truett Hirsch, followed by James D. Bielenberg, Truett Hirsch CFO. We are scheduled for a 45-minute call, and if there is sufficient time, we will host a brief question-and-answer session. I would like to introduce Will Lindgren, Truett Hirsch Director of Reporting and Finance, to read the company's safe harbor statement.
Thank you, Denise, and welcome everyone to our first quarter fiscal 2014 earnings call. Now for our safe harbor statement prior to introducing our speakers. The morning's earnings release and slide deck that will be referenced on this call can be found in our investor relations section of Truett Hirsch Inc.'s website at truetthirstinc.com. You may experience a format issue, so we encourage you to print out the slides or follow them on the URL that I will push. If you have any questions, you're more than welcome to contact me at will@truetthirsch.com or at 707-431-4436. A replay of this call will be posted on our website for 1 week through November 21st. Finally, as set forth in more detail in today's earnings call release, I need to remind everyone that today's call may include some forward-looking statements within the meaning of the Securities Act of 1933, the Securities Exchange Act of 1934, including with regard to future performance of the company. These forward-looking statements may involve certain risks and uncertainties that are based on our current plan. We believe that plan to be reasonable. There are many factors that may cause our actual results to be materially different from any future results expressed or implied in these forward-looking statements, including all the risk factors in our 10-K filed with the Securities Exchange Commission on September 27, 2013, and can be found on our website at truetthirstinc.com and on the SEC website. The company undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any of the forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. The unaudited condensed consolidated financial statements for the three-month period ended September 30, 2013 include the results of Truett Hirsch Inc. and its subsidiaries, HDD LLC, and its consolidated subsidiary, the WineSpies LLC. The unaudited condensed consolidated financial statements for the three-month period ended September 30, 2012 reflect the results of the LLC and WineSpies. Truett Hirsch Inc.'s fiscal 2013 period is from June 26, 2013 to June 30, 2013 due to the completion of our IPO on June 25, 2013. With that, I'd like to introduce Truett Hirsch President and CEO, Bill Hirsch.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Thank you, Will. I appreciate that introduction. Welcome, everybody, to our first quarter fiscal 2014 earnings call, our second official earnings call as a publicly traded company. As you most know, yesterday we issued a press release announcing our financial results for our first quarter ended September 30th, 2013. On today's agenda, we're going to give you a brief overview of the market in the United States and abroad, and I'm going to update some recent activity with the company. Jim, of course, will provide the financial information and results for this quarter. Then we'll host a brief question and answer period from there. Jim's going to provide the next stock, the next slide regarding our stock, and then I'll get into the market overview.
Thank you, Phil. Truett Hirsch Inc. is traded on NASDAQ under the symbol THST. Think of thirst being satisfied with a wonderful glass of wine. The stock has ranged from $4.60 to $6 a share with a relatively thin average volume of 12,000 shares a day. One of the reasons we're doing these earnings calls is to get the word out about the company. We're executing the story told in our roadshow, and Phil and I will be coordinating some non-deal roadshows with our underwriters to increase our visibility and ideally drive interest and trading volume in the stock. I'll be speaking at the Sidoti Microcap Conference in New York City in January. I'll now turn the call over to Phil to discuss the market overview and strategy.
Thank you very much, Jim. I appreciate that. The first slide is a very new slide from a publication based here in Northern California called Wines and Vines. They run data every month called Wine Industry Metrics. On this particular slide, you'll see data as it relates to off-premise sales. The off-premise category is our largest category of sales. So this data is particularly important for the company, and also some data on direct-to-consumer sales, another important category for us, both from a margin standpoint and also from a growth standpoint. As it relates to off-premise sales, we have data for the month of September and 12 months ending September, and you can see both of these metrics show significant growth now on what I think is a very, very large base now. So up 6% for the month-on-month September 2013 versus 2012, and up 7% for the year to $7.2 billion. So quite an important category for the industry and for Truett Hurst. As it relates to direct consumer, we also see nice growth. Month on month, September 13 versus 12, the category is up 6%, and for the 12 months ended September 2013, the category is up 10%. You can see the base now is $1.5 billion. I'll talk about this a little bit more later, but obviously becoming more and more important for the wine industry. So this is a very interesting slide that was presented by John Fredrickson. John Fredrickson is noted as one of the leading data providers in the industry. He gave this slide at a presentation a few months back at the Industry Symposium in Sacramento. And what I like about this slide and think that's kind of amazing is that we've seen 19 straight years of growth in the wine industry. It's very, very significant. Once again, as I mentioned earlier, this growth on a significant base. So the bottom part of this slide also shows consumption, and those are liter values. And you can see that in the United States, per capita consumption is only 12 liters per year, a relatively small number, especially compared to the European consumption. In France, 49 liters, and Italy, 42 liters. We actually see consumption in the United States growing fairly significantly on that small base, while consumption in Europe is coming down slightly because the category is very penetrated there. So we believe this represents quite a lot of upside growth for the category of wine in the United States and also for Truett Hurst. As I mentioned earlier, direct consumer continues to see success. And this is a quote from the Beverage Information Group regarding direct to consumer and states that direct to consumer was really for small wineries, boutique wineries, a way to get into the marketplace originally, but now big groups are starting to get into the direct-to-consumer business. And with the advertising and promotion that they're doing, they're driving the category, and it's helping us quite a lot. Direct-to-consumer revenues represent 4% of our case volume and 17% of our dollars, so it is quite an important category for us. Direct-to-consumer also represents our highest margin sales and helps build image and awareness for the company. So it's something that we'll continue to focus on in the future. The next slide relates to our ongoing strategic plan. And I just inserted this slide because I kind of wanted to check in on the strategy with you all, the strategy that we presented prior to the IPO and continue to execute for the company. So as we've continued to say, the company is focused on fast-growing super premium, ultra-premium wine categories. We're not great at the sub-$5 category. We're okay at the sub-$10 category, but we're really strong above that. And that's where we see the biggest growth in the wine industry right now. Also, big growth categories that we participate in are the private label business, where we continue to see retailer demand for high-quality, higher-priced private labels, and the direct-to-consumer business, which I just spoke about. Innovation is still key to the company. We're still trying to look at actual industry-changing items. I'll talk more about this later. Jim will talk about this a little bit as well, but we've been able to launch the products that we showed you pre-IPO. We're very excited about that. And we continue to believe that we have the best team in the business and some of the strongest retailer relationships in the business to help keep achieving our goals and objectives.
The financial information today will be comparing FY14 Q1 versus FY13 Q1. For simplicity, I'll refer to this as quarter over quarter, or the current period versus the prior period. I'll also do a deeper dive of this information later in the presentation, but to frame our performance, net sales grew 5% compared to the prior period and outpaced our cost of goods increase, resulting in an improved margin from 32 to 33%. We've established credibility in the marketplace with the industry's gatekeepers, and our wines are recognized for quality and their price-to-value relationship, significant as we have our retailer-exclusive programs. As such, our new brand introductions are in the super to ultra-premium categories, north of $10 a bottle, and these higher price points drive our revenue per case and improved margins. In FY14 Q1, we successfully launched California Square, and in Q2, on the store shelves right now in Safeway, the Paperboy brand. We also just announced the co-ownership agreement with longtime wine industry veteran Daryl Groom. The Colby Red brand represents a single SKU, predominant red Bordeaux varietal blend, and leveraging Daryl's relationships provides an entree into new channels of distribution and is synergistic with our other brands. The brand also has a great story. It's a cause marketing theme with the Heart Association that resonates with the consumer. In fact, the Colby Red brand has contributed over $350,000 to the Heart Association charities. And most importantly, as the CFO, from a cash standpoint, our cost of entry for this agreement is limited to inventory procurement. Lastly, our distributor transition to Southern Wine and Spirits is now complete and paying early dividends. Phil?
So as you can see, we've been quite busy, and fortunately, we've been able to launch the products that we've been speaking about on time or even slightly ahead of time. The first one that I would like to talk about is the revolutionary square bottle. So as a lot of you know, we have designed and built in conjunction with our great partner, Kevin Shaw from Stranger & Stranger, one of the first ever square wine bottles for distribution into the United States. I think you also know that we have a wonderful relationship with a leading retailer in this country called Total Wines & More, a company that has about 110 stores around the country, growing very fast and over $1 billion in sales. So together we partnered on the launch at the California Square. We decided to launch it at the 65th Annual Emmy Awards in Los Angeles this year, and we got quite a lot of attention and accolades for that launch. In this slide, you can see some of the major television stars that stopped by to taste our wine and snap a photo with us. Also, you can see a display that's up in every single Total store around the country. Very significant commitment from a very strong partner. So the next slide relates to Paperboy. And you've heard me talk about Paperboy a lot in the past. What we believe is really the first paper wine bottle ever in the history of the world of wine. Really launched in quarter two, but now on store shelves around the country. We've launched it with Safeway stores in every store around the country. On the slide, you can see in the bottom left-hand side a display that was built in the Northwest in Safeway store, so you can see quite a big commitment from our partners at Safeway. And then the picture on the right is just the shot of the bottles now after completion. Once again, this design was brought to us by Kevin and his team at Stranger & Stranger, and we're very, very excited about this launch. Last thing I want to say about Paperboy is that if you guys have the chance to look at the Today Show this Friday at 10 a.m., you'll actually see a segment with Hoda and Kathy Lee about the Paperboy. So we're getting some very, very exciting early press on the product. The next slide is a result of those efforts of press and marketing as it relates to the square bottle specifically. You can see some big names on this, and this is just a snippet of the attention that we've gotten for square bottle. This slide shows some of the specific articles that we've received as well. So we're very pleased with this launch and the attention that we're getting. This slide is a slide regarding the Colby Red deal that we've just signed. We sent out a brief press release noting this deal. We'll also send out more information in the coming weeks. This brand is a brand that was developed by Daryl Groom, who's really a noted winemaker from around the world, originally from Australia, worked for the very well-known Penfolds brand, and actually worked on the Grange wine when he was a winemaker there. So Daryl has a deep winemaking history, also at Geyser Peak here in our local Sonoma County. Colby is the name of his son, and this was a brand that was designed to give back to heart charities because Colby had a lot of heart issues when he was a young child. So to date, these guys have given $350,000 to heart charities in a relatively short period of time. We think it's one of the largest charitable brands, wine brands in the country, and we're excited to be a part of it. Daryl's been a longtime friend of mine, and we're very eager to get moving together. In this slide also, you'll see on the right-hand side a display that's been developed in conjunction with Hershey's Chocolate, and it's going to run in all the Walgreens stores. There's approximately 4,400 Walgreens stores around the country. This display is slated to launch in February, which is Heart Month. Obvious reasons, we've got Valentine's Day, but also some other heart-related activities going on in February.
And Phil, just going back to the Colby program, Hershey's is subsidizing that display in a big way. So again, that's a huge benefit to us with no cost. This slide, our net sales overview. Reminder, we have three distinct channels of business: wholesale, direct-to-consumer, which I'll call DTC, and our internet business, which is the Wine Spies. Net sales after deducting excise tax for the current quarter totaled $5.4 million compared to the prior period's $5.2 million. Quarter-over-quarter growth totaled 5% and was driven by a 23% increase in unit revenue to $87.75 per case compared to $71.32 for FY13 Q1. This price increase and change in sales mix buoyed the decrease in total case volume from 74,000 to 63,000 cases. The wholesale segment, which competes in the super and ultra premium categories, accounted for 93% of our case sales volume and 75% of our net sales dollars. Although the segment in dollars was down 5%, the real story is the 15% increase in revenue per case for this segment to $68.52 that positions us so well for the future. Our new brand introductions with higher price points and stronger margins replaced brands that were either discontinued, downward trending, or making up for seasonal sales that occurred in the prior period and not in the current. In FY13 Q1, we introduced the evocative wrap programs. And in FY14 Q1, we introduced California Square, Paso Ranches, and an opportunistic program, TJ's Petite Rosé. These new brand introductions generated nearly $1.5 million in gross sales and exceeded the case volume and sales launch of the evocative wraps in FY13 Q1. Further growth in FY14 is supported by the launch of Paperboy, which occurred in FY14 Q2. As we look at other growth opportunities, the change in our distributor relationship to Southern Wine and Spirits, the nation's largest distributor, positions us for growth in our broad market brands, Bradford Mountain and Healdsburg Ranches, through an expanded account base and a tremendous number of feet on the street. our once DTC exclusive VML brand, is also poised for growth and increased consumer awareness as it's being introduced in selected broad market accounts, including fine wine shops and white tablecloth restaurants. We believe this is significant as the consumer becomes more aware, may reach out to us for wine club shipments and membership, and ideally visit the property when they come to wine country in Northern California. The DTC and internet segments combined approximated 6% of our volume and 25% of our sales dollars. DTC volume was up 5% and sales dollars up 25%. WineSpies, our internet business, acquired in August of 2012, was up 54% in volume and 145% in sales dollars. Admittedly, a portion of this increase is the result of 3 months of operations in the current period compared to two in the prior, but we're very pleased with how this segment is trending. Next slide presents our gross margin overview, and quarter-over-quarter margins improved 1% to 33% as a result of the increase in unit revenue and sales mix. Again, this is significant. If we look back at our 10K, we saw that we had a 9-point improvement for calendar year-end 6/30/13. So again, an improvement in margin based upon mix and price points. Wholesale margins increased 1% to 26% as a result of the increase in unit revenue and sales mix. DTC margins decreased slightly from 64% to 60% based upon increased promotions to drive the top line and wine club memberships. We really see these wine club memberships as an annuity for us. People are excited about the wines having something exclusive and unique, and so we want to continue in promoting that avenue. Internet margins also increased slightly, 1% from 40% to 41%. I'd like now to focus on the below-the-line operating expenses, and OPEX totaled $1.9 million compared to $1.1 in the prior period. Sales and marketing expense totaled 1.1 or was 20% of net sales compared to 0.8 million or 15% of net sales for the prior period. 0.1 million of this increase reflects non-cash stock-based compensation, and the remainder includes the marginal costs associated with incremental sales, variable sales and marketing expenses, fixed expenses pertaining to the internet sales, the WineSpies 50% interest acquired in August of 2012, as well as increased fixed personnel costs associated with developing our marketing team and infrastructure. These are things consistent with what we talked about in our roadshow. Current period G&A expense totaled $0.8 million, or 16% of net sales, compared to $0.4 million, or 7% of net sales for the prior period. The significant change in G&A expense was due to 0.2 million increase in professional fees and public company related costs, and 0.2 million in personnel and infrastructure expenses associated with an emerging growth company. Again, we've been consistent in the presentations that we had made associated with the IPO and building the necessary elements of the business to meet the increased sales growth. The next slide is basic versus fully diluted LPS. Our GAAP basis LPS was a penny a share, and the denominator reflects the 2.7 million shares owned by the public, or 39% of the company. Assuming our LLC interests are converted to Class A shares and our restricted stock awards are fully vested, the company has a total of 7,054,644 shares outstanding. With that, the LPS would be zero per share. As this is anti-dilutive, only the basic calculation is used. In a profitable scenario, the fully diluted number of shares is used. In a loss situation, the basic shares is used. Our next slide is an overview of the balance sheet. And you'll see that total assets increased $0.3 million to $34.5 million at September 30, 2013, compared to our year-end at June 30, 2013. The key balance sheet line item changes during the period reflects a $3 million decrease in cash and a $1 million decrease in accounts receivable, which funded a $3.9 million increase in inventory. The increase in inventory is associated with our new brand launches, inventory needed to meet our increased sales demands, including an increase in grapes compared to the 2012 harvest. Working capital of $16.1 million at September 30 declined $0.3 million from the June 30 year-end. Term debt represented 11% of total liabilities and equity, and 20% to equity at both September 30, 2013 and June 30, 2013. The change in working capital was due to the increase in inventory as previously discussed. Debt to equity, including redeemable contributed capital at September 30, 2013 was 0.79 to 1 compared to 0.78 to 1 at June 30. So balance sheet really relatively flat. The investment was in inventory necessary to meet the increased sales and to position us for the new programs. Based on current expectations, information and estimates regarding our future results, and subject to the factors described in the forward-looking statement section of our earnings press release for the first quarter of fiscal 2014, which represents risk to this forecast, we're online with our projected annual guidance for fiscal 2014. Sales could range between $24 and $28 million, which represents top-line growth of 40% to 60%. Gross margins, we're anticipating between 31 and 34%, and OPEX between $6.8 and $7.5 million. This is a similar forward-looking statement that we made our year-end earnings call. I'd like now to turn this back to Phil to briefly summarize our comments and answer some Q&A with our investors.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate that. In summary, I think you can see that we're off to a very good start for this year. We're very pleased with the results for the first quarter that we're reporting now. And we're also pleased to see that we've exceeded analyst expectations as it relates to sales. Our margins are up slightly. Our bottom line is close, but we're slightly up in expenses right now as we continue to grow resources and introduce new process systems and other things that will help the company kind of move forward into the future. I want to thank everybody on the call and supporting the company on behalf of our team. Our team is working extraordinarily hard. They're very excited about the opportunities that we have in front of us. We truly appreciate your support. We do believe that fiscal year 14 is shaping up very well for us. With the launch of these new products, I feel that we're building the foundation for very, very strong growth for us for the future. That said, we're not done. We're still looking at new innovation projects. We're still looking at new partnership deals. We see a lot of opportunity in the market right now based on consumption increasing, based on international sales increasing. Our goal is to continue to innovate and create new and exciting products. And when I'm out speaking to big retailers around the country, this clearly is their number one strategic goal internally for those companies. So I feel that we're right on point as it relates to the retail strategies as well. So thank you very much. We appreciate that. We've got a little time for questions now, and we'll begin to take them as they come in.
Thank you, sir. If you do wish to participate in today's question and answer session, you may press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. If you are using a speakerphone, we do ask that you pick up your handset before asking your question. If your question has been addressed and you would like to withdraw from the queue, you may press star, then two. And we'll pause just a moment to assemble our roster. The first question will come from Michael Halen of Sidoti. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi. When does the Colby Red brand expected to launch, and can you give us some more color on your plans to distribute the brand?
Hi, Michael. Yep. Thanks for the question. The deal was signed just a few days ago on Colby. It's effective November the 1st, but we really don't expect to see sales begin until December the 1st as we start to move licensing and compliance to our distributor network. Fortunately, the distributor networks align very well with the existing Colby Red business. And not only are there some sales opportunities, revenue opportunities with Colby, but there's a lot of other strategic elements as it relates to that deal. Daryl Groom is working with some large retailers that we currently don't work with, and he's doing quite a lot of work in the on-premise environment as well, where we don't do any work right now. That answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thanks. I got a couple more.
Okay.
I guess also, how are shipments of Dearly Beloved and Eden Ridge in the first quarter? Can you give us any color on that?
I can, yes. Eden Ridge shipments were very, very strong. Eden Ridge is the number three selling wine at Total Wines & More right now. They have a huge display for the top 20 wines around the country. So Eden Ridge has been displayed and promoted for very, very significantly for the first quarter, and sales have been strong for us. Dearly Beloved sales have been good, but not fantastic, and the reason for that is we didn't get the Fearless Flyer ad that they normally run on that brand for this time of the year. So some stores went rogue and ran their own ads and displays, and we saw good sales, but not quite what we were expecting.
Okay, thanks. And finally, regarding the inventory purchases, were they strictly the planned purchases in order to keep up with your projected shipments, or was there some opportunistic buying in there to take advantage of the strong harvest this year?
Mike, we were able to do some opportunistic purchasing. The harvest, we actually increased our grape procurement to roughly 1,700 tons compared to 1,400 tons in the 2012 vintage. Pricing was favorable. We were able to pick up some additional grapes opportunistically at a reduced price, so we were pleased with that. Again, the other elements of inventory, and so that portion of grapes, we had a little bit more in the hopper at September 13 than we did at 12, so that's one component of it being up. And then the other is having the inventory for California Square and for paper.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And once again, to ask a question, you may press star, then one. The next question will come from Brent Rystrom of Fettle. Please go ahead with your question.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good morning, guys, or good afternoon.
Afternoon. Good morning.
Couple of quick questions. How should we think about your SG&A expense guidance? You've got the range of the 6.8 to the 7.5. Does the 6.8 reference on the $24 million and the 7.5 reference on the $28 million, or are the variables within that range regardless of sales revenue?
There was a variable component to it, which provided the 7.5 coming up a bit. We are $500,000 over in the expenses compared to the analyst reports for the first quarter, so it's going to be tight. I suspect that for Q2 we'll be refining our guidance as we have a better sense of the actual sales coming through on paper, the reload on Square. So it is going to be tight. We have taken the necessary steps in growing this business. Real pleased that we've been able to add a couple of folks on the sales force. We have brought in a vice president, controller, and information systems, which has more horsepower than the previous controller that we had. So we're taking the steps to really fine-tune this infrastructure and be able to grow the business. But as I said, it's going to be tight.
Right, and the 7.5 is kind of a worst-case scenario. Is there a reason it would go above 7.5?
Well, we do have some variable expenses associated with sales, so to that end, yes, it could go north of that. We're trying to manage the fixed expenses as best as we can. We've kept the operations very lean, but as we have grown the business, there's a demand for some additional personnel and fixed costs. So I think it could go north of the 2.5 or of the 7.5.
And would that be on a sales excess exceeding 28, or would that be in the range of 24 to 28? It could go higher.
It would be on the high end of the sales forecast, Brent, and possibly with the exceeding sales.
Right.
As we spoke about, we exceeded sales in the first quarter, so sales expenses were up a little bit in relationship to that, but also some of our publicly traded expenses were a little higher than we anticipated as well.
And do you see those going forward at about 200 a quarter, or do you have a difference on that going forward?
Well, the first quarter, Brent, dealt with the costs associated with the June 30 year-end and the 10-K. So those costs were higher than what we had expected. Candidly, we have already disclosed the material weakness in internal controls, not uncommon for an emerging growth company to have. Will Lindgren, our Director of Reporting and Finance, is in the process right now of documenting all of our processes and procedures, and as those roll out and are tested by our CPA firm, then they'll be able to reduce some of their procedures, which will translate to reduced audit fees. We're also converting our software and to something which is much more robust, which is going to go a long way with our internal reporting and also streamline a number of processes for us. So we're very excited about that. And the new Vice President Controller and Information Systems person that I brought on with some very deep experience is leading that charge.
And then from working capital perspective, can you kind of walk us through how you see working capital evolving in the next quarter or two, particularly the December quarter?
Well, our margins we're expecting to hold in that 33% range. That's really our target, and based upon sales mix, if it goes north of that, that's even better. With respect to inventories, we do a couple of things. The grapes that are purchased naturally ties to the direct-to-consumer brands of Truett Hurst, VML, and then Bradford Mountain, and a portion of it for Healdsburg Ranches. We then have a relationship with another winery who we utilize their capacity, and they will process close to 100,000 cases for us. And so that bulk wine will come online in quarters 3 and 4. And so I'll be making payments on that. And that product won't hit our books until we take physical possession of that wine. Our goal is to try to flip that as quickly as we can. Realistically, it's from the 2013 vintage, so some of that could roll out in Q4 of 14. And the majority of it's going to roll out in Qs 1 and 2 of 15. We also will opportunistically utilize the spot market to fill any voids. In terms of working capital, I'm very comfortable with the inventory that we have in-house right now. We'll be doing some bottling in this month and next to meet the sales that are going to be occurring in Q2. But I don't see any significant bulk wine or spot purchases that are going to be required. So we're in good shape.
And then any new product introductions, you know, that we haven't talked about previously as far as the second half of the year? Anything coming that
you want more, Brent?
always want more. Now, just trying to you know, figure the model.
Yep, and we want more too. We don't have any new product launches scheduled. We're really just getting paper into the marketplace right now. The bottles have been a limiting factor for us as far as getting distribution. The demand is far outstripping our bottle production right now. So we're going to be working on getting that bottle production up and expanding distribution dramatically. Square is going very well. Total Wines and More is very pleased about the sales of Square. early on, and really when you look at our broad market brands like Bradford Mountain, VML, Healdsburg Ranches, it's brand new into the distribution environment, and we see good growth there too. So no new products specifically on the list, but expanded distribution for sure.
All right, final question. Was the Colby Red, is that part of your 24 to 28 million guidance, or is that outside of that?
It hasn't been. No, the Colby Red deal has just been announced. We're still assessing what the impact will be on the financials. We're hopeful that it'll be incremental to what we have in the plan right now. We just have to get a feeling for what the inventory is, when we could actually take possession of the wine and start selling it into the marketplace.
Great. Well, thank you very much, guys.
Thank you very much.
And ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude our question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Philip Hurst for his closing remarks.
So hopefully today everyone's found our presentation a little bit more enlightening than our first call. We're making an effort to provide more and more information and more color as it relates to our business. Needless to say, we're very excited about our business. We've been requested to go out on the road and share this information with others around the country, specifically investors and investor groups. We'll be doing that in the coming months. We want to, again, thank everybody for their support, their participation. The company's still very young, very new. The growth is amazing, and we look forward to the rest of 2014. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference has now concluded. We thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect your lines.